So some of these roles, I'd meet people, and they were just some of the brightest people you've ever met. And it was clear, like, oh, yeah, you should be the athletic director here, or you should be, you know, the commissioner here. It just makes sense. And then you'd meet other people, and you're like, how'd you get here, you know? And what are you doing here? And long story short, I just think there's a lot of room to grow to staff our next line of leaders in sports. And one thing that I just got a kick out of during my time at the NCAA is I would go back to my alma mater, Marquette, and I would do recruiting and development for the National Sports Law Institute. And seeing, like, the future, the draft picks, was just so encouraging. And, you know, one thing I hated in my previous job is I worked in sports. I had one of the coolest jobs in the world. And somehow people would still find a way to complain about it. You know, one of my great mentors, she's amazing. She runs March Madness, by the way, which is so cool. Her name's Joanne Scott. She said, you know, Aaron, some of these people, you know, they could win the lottery, and the first thing that they would do is complain about the taxes. And, you know, I got that. And I would think to myself, geez, like, you work in sports. This is a privilege. Some of the folks that I meet, when I go back to Marquette, they would kill. They'd just shadow you. Not to mention, like, what would they do to just have your salary and be able to do what you do. And so I found myself gravitating towards this next wave of leaders, mm-hmm. because they were positive about their future and they had big ideas and they wouldn't complain. They were just looking for solutions. And that's definitely in line with me. I'm definitely a glass half full type of person, and I wanted to be around glass half full type people. And so when this role came up, I saw it as threefold. One, I run a program. So it's like running a small business. I'm getting to do things that I've never done before that are going to be extremely important on the resume for whatever I do next. Invaluable experience. Two, I think we are staffing sports from the ground level with the next wave of quality leaders. Not just leaders, quality leaders. Mm-hmm. I want our next group of sports executives that have a degree from this program here at ASU to be known, you know, when you see that credential in sports, oh yeah, they came out of there, that means something. Mm-hmm. And I take that responsibility not lightly. And finally, there's this whole idea of, I'm reading a book right now, it's called Generative Leadership, and that's you know, keeping the ball rolling in our industry. And I just think this next wave is extremely important, not only for them to do well and for our industry to do well, but just for my benefit. I get a lot of satisfaction and utility out of when one of our students is struggling and gnawing and clawing and scratching and just trying to do whatever they can to land a job in sports. That first one is so hard. It's a long uphill battle, but then a lot of them make it. And the day that they make it, it's so gratifying. It really is. Like, I mean, I tear up every time it happens. It feels like I got the job, honestly. And I did not get the job, but like, it feels like it. It makes my day. It makes my week, especially when I know these people and how hard they've worked and the type of work and change they're going to bring to the industry. It's very, very fulfilling.
What are those, you know, for the students who you mentored, who have gone, you know, scratched and clawed to get those jobs? When you're on the other side of the table and you're interviewing those students or those candidates, what is it that you look for? What qualities do you look for? You know, some people will be coming, you know, to this program, whether they're JD students here, JD students elsewhere, who may not have any experience in sports, but outside of just being a huge fan and wanting to impact the sports world, versus someone who played, you know, collegiate athletics and is now in a law program. What are things that you look for that kind of distinguishes candidates to kind of make those students or those candidates go to the next level?
Sure. So you mentioned people who don't have a connection in sports, right? Pretty mm-hmm. light Rolodex, and they're just a fan. The first step always is to beat the fan out of them, or at least separate it and say, hey, are you sure that you want to work in sports? Because there's mm-hmm. some significant barriers to entry and to staying, honestly, that are not convenient. So are you sure you want to work in sports? Are you as fanatical about the business of sports and the practice of sports versus watching your favorite team on Sundays? That's important. And to demonstrate that maturity, you've leaped a big step, because we'd get so many resumes and applications at the NCAA for multitude of positions. And weirdly enough, I mean, it was probably a large number. 75% of those were people who were fans, or mm-hmm. like sports, loved the idea of sports, but they were never able to communicate why they like the business and the practice of the industry of sports. And one that doesn't show maturity in the decision to decide to apply to, in our case, the NCAA, but two, like, we don't want to put you in a place for you to fail either, because the working in sports versus being a spectator and fan of sports are two very, very different things. And so the people who divorced those two, always got a little bit more of a look. I think the second thing is people just know what they want to do. A thing that I get from a lot of students or people who are trying to break in is, I'll do whatever. I'll do whatever it takes. And that's actually, that's like a good attitude to have about life in general. Not when you're looking for a job in sports. Because then it goes back to that fan, right? Like, are you just a fan that just wants to be around this? Or have you thought about what you want to do exactly? And if you can articulate that in a compelling way, like, this is what I want to do. I just don't want to work in sports. I don't want to just work in college sports. I don't just want to work at any university. I want to work at the NCAA. And, it's like a funnel. You can get down to the specific position you really want to do in an interview setting. That's pretty important. For me, it was always really compelling. Lastly, the experience that you bring to the table. I was on a regular standing hiring committee every year for our internship program, and it's one of the best internships in sports nationwide. And one of the reasons that we're able to pool such a talented group of people every year is we would actually pay our interns, which a lot of people don't know. You usually don't get paid for internships in sports. And so ours was a year-long program, benefited, paid, and it was also, I think, a transformational experience. Biasly, I thought that was a transformational experience. And we'd get these resumes, and, in enforcement, we usually favored JDs. Finalists always ended up being JDs. But getting from that pile of resumes to the phone interview pile or to the in-person interview pile, I think the people who, on their experience, were able to articulate their path and their commitment to this industry always did better. And so, for instance, if you're a JD who was really bright and you took a clerkship with a big-time firm and did well there and made a bunch of money also, and you had other opportunities like that where it was clear, like, you did neat things and they were very valuable to your professional experience, didn't help you as much as the person who took three unpaid opportunities or very low-paying opportunities in sports or volunteer opportunities. And it just showed there was a record of, hey, this person is really committed to sports. That's how it worked at the time anyways. One thing that I've changed a little bit there is not everybody can afford to do those unpaid things. And so I know there's a little bit of discussion in our country, like, our unpaid internships, or should those even be like a legal thing? And we could talk about that, but at least right now it shows some degree of willingness, or you really, really want to do this. And to work in sports, you really have to really want to do it to have sustained success there.
Oh, great. When you have, when you're looking at students' materials or candidates' materials, what are things that immediately jump out to you, or the things that, you know, positive and negative, things that you say, I don't want to see another, like, three-page resume or whatever it is? Because I know, like, you know, law school and, like, the legal profession, there's a lot of, like, keep it short, keep it concise. Your resume should not be on one page, or should only be one page. Things like that. Like, what are things to you that stick out, you know, be it, you know, for these employment opportunities, internships, or even for the students who are applying to your program?
Yep. You know, nobody does this, and not nobody, but there's very few people who do this, and I guarantee you it's 100% successful all the time. When you're writing a cover letter, you should always tailor it to the position that you're going after. It takes time. It's a pain, I understand. But if you've got your general boilerplate with some terms highlighted, because, you know, you need to, like, control F and, like, replace them with, like, which we're all guilty of, by the way. Like, don't get me wrong. I did this my 3L year, too. It's just not going to be as effective. That's not going to be as potent and land the same way when you really think about something. And if you look at job descriptions, so I'm focusing on the job side right now instead of the program, but if you look at job descriptions, to me, those are answer keys. And they're literally telling you, they being the employer, we want this, we want this. These are all our qualifications. They're usually bulleted, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And each one of those points should be addressed at some point by you. And the candidates who take the time to really study that and craft a good letter that addresses all those points, I mean, I can almost guarantee that you're at least going to get a second look, you know? But people don't like taking the time to do that. And so rather than take a shotgun approach at jobs, for everybody listening to this, I would spend more time figuring out what I want to do, networking with people there. So you have I call it loaded dice. You want to have some loaded dice in the process, like load your dice a little bit by networking with people there. And then spend some time demonstrating that you showed time into your application. Resumes, you know, it's an art more than a science. I teach a class right now where we have to evaluate resumes. And, you know, me and the co-teacher even differ on some things. I would recommend brevity and using your white space pretty good. I was aggravated by this study that came out when I was in law school. It said the average employer, the amount of time they spend looking at a resume, do you know what the time was on it?
My guess is like 30 seconds, a minute.
It was 15 seconds.
Oof.
And I was irate because I'd been in my career services office, like, trying to find the right words for everything and formatting this thing just wonderfully and trying to get as much content on these pages as possible. And I looked at that, and I was like, that is a slap in the face. They're spending 15 seconds on my resume. And then I was humbled because when I was at the NCAA, you know, these hiring committees were not part of my day job. This was extra. Like, my job was to enforce bylaws, conduct investigations, mm-hmm. you know, deal with my clients. Hiring committees, that's extra work, right? And so you want to get through that extra work as quickly as you can. And I timed myself, and wouldn't you know it, I was spending less than 15 seconds on each resume. In fact, it was single digits. And so you really want to focus on the big points that you want to make quickly. And usually that the meat of where you're going to be able to carry the day is your work experience and your professional experience. A lot of the detail, you know, you want to make sure you have tightened up in case they look at it. There's no typo in there, anything like that. But the most important thing is getting those bulleted, bolded things just right and ordering them in a way for that particular position that you think, hey, this is going to land well.
Sure. That's really great advice, actually. going to take some of those notes for myself. Now I have the Suns, the Phoenix Suns used to have the 7 seconds or less offense. That's what it's going to be for a resume now.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, we're coming close to the end of our conversation here, but you know, I'm curious as far as whatever you can share, what are, because our sports law program here, both on the JD side and the Master of Sports Law Business Program side, is growing at what seems to be a very fast rate here. So, and there's a lot of excitement in the building about it, and that's attributed to you and Professor Don Gibson and Professor Glenn Wong. So, what are things that you're looking forward to working on in the future with this program? I mean, currently working on and then in the future?
Yeah, you know, I think that we really need to spend a lot of time figuring out and spending time with the type of student that we're bringing here. And so our marketing strategy and our recruiting strategy we've done a deep dive on, and we're going to be implementing some of those elements over the next year or two, where we really want to bring 5-star recruits all the time.
Okay.
And you know, we spent a lot of time on this last class, and the dividends have been paying off already with people who are really excited about being here and they really want to work in sports. Our central goal in this program is that our students get jobs in sports. That's the bottom line. And all decisions we make have to connect back to that in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And so we decided that this year, given the situation we're in, where networking is a little tougher and in-person opportunities are almost non-existent, we needed to get creative. And so we've started bringing in industry executives. We just had through this series, it's called the C-League Speaker Series, we just had one today with Jim Paxson from the Chicago Bulls and Nick Aren from the Golden State Warriors.
The same Jim Paxson?
Yes. Yep. Same family.
Unbelievable.
We had the Seattle Kraken join us a couple of weeks ago. That was really fun for me because all four of the Seattle Kraken employees who joined us, they're all black and working in hockey, which is rare, you know, including the first ever black play-by-play guy in NHL's
wow.
history, that he joined us as well. We have a diverse student population that, you know, I want to make sure that they have examples to show them that, hey, I'm a young black kid. Hockey's a path for me too. And they were able to demonstrate that. We had Joe Garagiola, former GM of the Diamondbacks, now special advisor to the president, and Aaron Cohen, former president of the Coyotes. They joined us. Debbie Spander, who's a senior vice president at Wasserman, joined us. So the speaker series is a way for our students to spend a lot of time with industry executives in as intimate of a setting as we can make it in COVID-19 times. And so even though we're not getting them in person with each other, I think we're able to leverage industry people who aren't on planes as much to be able to sit down and spend some time with us. And if I can get them time with our students are going to shine.
Mm-hmm.
It's just getting them the time with them so our students have that opportunity. And so that's a big initiative that we pushed, and we're going to expand that greatly in the future. Our goal is to have the C-League Speaker Series be something nationally known, you know, where we end up producing it in a way where, it becomes something like, hey, this is something I regularly listen to, you know. I don't know if you've seen Glenn do these things, but he's excellent at interviewing.
Uh-huh.
You could do it, by the way. You're doing a good job as well.
This is my audition tape.
There you go.
Professor Wong.
You're hired. You know, we've launched this year a mentoring program. I mentioned that when I got into law school, you know, I didn't have any connections in sports other than Rick, you know, who was a blessing from God. And a lot of these folks that we're bringing in are super talented and they have some commitment to sports, but maybe they don't have that sponsor in the industry that really you need to have any shot of getting in. And so we just launched that, and we have some all-star mentors in our program. We have the former athletic director from UCLA, Dan Guerrero. He's going to be mentoring one of our students. The senior women administrator at the University of Alabama, she's going to be mentoring one of our students. Wow. We have people, you know, from the Dallas Cowboys to golf tours to working at ESPN. Oh, there's a lawyer at ESPN who's going to be mentoring one of our JD students. And so that's something we look to expand in the future, because not only will it give our students an opportunity to get that sponsor they need, but it'll also give all these industry people an opportunity to look into our program and see what we're doing. And I think the best way we can sell our program to the industry is to give them experience with our people, with our talent.
Sure.
And if they have good experiences, which I think they will for the most part, we'll be able to have a more national brand. In terms of long-term initiatives, you know, there's some ideas that I have rolling around in my head. I think there's some opportunity to do some work in the HBCU space, where, you know, being a former investigator, every year there'd be an HBCU under investigation or getting charged, slapped with an NCAA infraction. And it was always largely tied to a lack of resources. They weren't able to remain compliant with NCAA bylaws because of being understaffed and just not having enough resources to meet those membership requirements, or, you know, requirements of the bylaws at the NCAA. And so when you're that under-resourced and you get slapped with violations of NCAA infractions, you know, the last thing you want to do is pay a bunch of money for attorneys to help defend you. And so I've thought about that, you know, that'd be something cool for our program.
Mm-hmm.
And be a good, I think, kind of civic thing.
Sure.
To do.
Sounds like a really good, like, clinic idea, too.
Yeah, you know, I think we have a lot of room for growth and initiative to impact the scholarship of sports law and business. Remember, we are a sports law and business program. And mm-hmm. so I can see us continue to, we have two new courses that we've added, or we're going to be adding in the spring of 2021. One is focused completely on diversity, equity, and inclusion. You know, I got a lot of feedback from my friends in the industry when the George Floyd protests were happening earlier this year that they didn't know what to do. And they wish they had gotten training on this stuff. And maybe the only time they'd ever received any training on this stuff was a seminar, and that's about it, or going to some conference. They never got a course on this, and they needed it. Not for, like, doing right by humans, but, like, just for, like, operating their business. You know, they could have used it. And so that's one thing we added we want our students to be equipped with. And we're actually we added this other course that I'm teaching and I'm co-teaching with industry professionals. The former president of ESPN, Ed Earhart, is going to be teaching the course. Melissa Goldenberg, she's the general counsel of the Suns. Ken Shropshire, who's the executive director at Global Sports Institute, and Joe Gargiola, he's the former GM of the Diamondbacks. They will all be teaching this course with me. And the thought there is not only to expose our students to different elements of sports business and concepts that will be valuable for them going into the industry, but also to spend time with these people. Again, the more I can get these industry people to spend time with our students, the more they'll shine.
That's fantastic, and kind of a great way to end this. But Aaron, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with me today and you know, share your experience and your plan for the future. We really appreciate it at the Arizona State Sports and Entertainment Law Journal.
It's a pleasure, Brandon. Thank you.
Bye.